Welcome to Small Bites Radio with Donato Marino and Derek Tim. We hope you're hungry.
Raw spaghetti you can eat with a spoon. Oh, SpaghettiOs.
Hit it.
Where's the beef?
Cookie.
He likes it.
No soup for you. No soup for you. No soup for you.
Feed me more.
Long as I can have you here with me, I'd much rather be forever in blue jeans, babe.
Evening all. It is Small Bites on Wi-Fi Radio. This is John Howard Fusco, food writer and blogger of Eating in South Jersey. And immediately across the desk from me is none other than
Derek Tim of BlueJeanFood.com. And I love it when you're in studio, John, because that means 100% accuracy. I can't get your name incorrect.
That's correct.
Because everyone knows I did get it wrong for at least 3 years running, and you're just too nice of a guy to let me know. But Don is not here. He's having fun in Colorado somewhere, so we wish Don the best of luck at whatever's going on out there.
Yes, yeah, so he's at a wedding, so when you're thinking fun in Colorado, there's certain things. No, it's not that. He's going to a wedding.
I always think of whitewater rafting when I think of Colorado. See, everyone has different thoughts.
Different thoughts.
And maybe other people think that Colorado is one of the states that you can partake in
certain things.
Certain things. But one of the things that I hope everyone's partaking in is listening to this show, possibly live. I know what we're all definitely partaking with in studio is that we have a wonderful gentleman in studio, and that is John Stewart. It's the John and John show tonight.
That's right. Easy names for you, Derek.
Exactly. Well, I was going to make a John joke, but we'll keep the potty humor at bay tonight. But John is the owner and executive chef of Kitchen 519 yep. in Glendora, New Jersey. He brought a wonderful spread in for us. So before you get started with any stories of what you're about or how you got started, tell everyone, since they can't see, what did you bring in studio?
Well, thank you for having me tonight, guys. I appreciate it. Tonight we brought you the Gouda mac and cheese that's been on our menu for
yes, that's fabulous
since we opened. You know, that's always been a staple, and it's like, you know, everyone loves that. We did a roasted Brussels sprout with porchetta. We get the Duroc pork belly, roll it up, smoke it in our smoker, cut it up. It's just absolutely great. Honestly, it's the only way I can get people to eat pork belly. It seems like, you know, you try to give them like the app or the, you know, a piece of pork belly, and they're just like, oh, it's too gross.
I'm the other way around. I'm like, you know, I just need the Brussels sprouts. The pork belly is just an added treat, but the Brussels sprouts themselves are fabulous.
It's nice, man. And like people are a little scared of it, but you know, they got to open up to it. Then we brought in the spicy chicken sandwich. This was our capitalist approach to the spicy chicken debate.
Well, absolutely. You know what? With the whole craziness of chicken sandwiches, you might as well partake, you know?
And it's way better than anything you get in fast food. It's non-GMO, no antibiotics, you know.
And he's not wrong. It is much better than what you can get in a fast food place.
Yeah, yeah. We take a little bit more pride than what the fast food guys are pumping out.
So, yeah, everything is fabulous. I'm so glad you brought it all in. So, so why don't you tell us a little bit about the restaurant and when you got started, what's the concept behind the restaurant, and, you know, where you are right now.
Well, we're coming up on 6 years, which is crazy. I never dreamed of making it past one.
So. Yeah, well, 6 years, that says a lot in itself right there.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, yeah. So we're doing something right. But the restaurant started with me and my business partner. We just wanted to have a place that we would want to eat at. You know, something a little different from the South Jersey scene, where we can, you know, kind of have an evolving menu that kind of moves around a little bit. And you know, that's the catch 22. We make this place, we want to go there, but we're too busy working in it. So
right.
We're just always there, we're just always doing stuff. So, like I said, 6 years coming in, and you know, it's still a ride. It's still crazy.
So for someone who hasn't been to Kitchen 519 yet, how would you, what would you be your overall description? What would be your elevator pitch, so to speak?
Eclectic design. You know, we do a lot of local artists. Mm-hmm. All the art on the walls, local art. It's okay. All commissary. So anything you see, you can buy. We just try to tell people to come with an open mind because, you know, we'll jump on whatever's fresh, whatever's local, whatever we can get for our specials. You know, our core menu only switches around a little bit through the year, but definitely the specials are like, that's the heart and soul of the restaurant. You know, that's where we kind of say, okay, what do we want to do and how do we want to do it?
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, when you talk about being eclectic, but what you brought here is very, to me, it's very approachable. I mean, this is not really anything that's really like so far out of left field to like, you know, what's this? I think this stuff is very approachable.
Yeah, and that's always been kind of like our downside too, because like we keep trying to like bring it back a little bit because like we don't want to, you know, do things that are too crazy. I mean, we are in South Jersey, you know, we're not in Philly, we're not in the big city, so we got to like.
But that to me, sometimes I hear chefs do say that, oh, we're in Jersey. It's just my opinion. I think that that might allow you to be a slightly more creative, because once you go into Philadelphia, say you try a dish that misfires.
Yeah.
My goodness gracious, yeah, would they be in an uproar?
Mm-hmm. They don't forget. They'll remember that. And it's fun in a sense because like we have to educate our guests to certain things. Like if I get a fish that they don't know what it is, or you know, I've got to describe to them where it comes from, and you know, try to sell them on it, so to speak. You know, it's like swordfish, it's like salmon, it's like whatever you're used to eating. Like, just come on, let's try it. And then once they try it, they love it, and then they start gaining that respect for what we're doing. They're like, okay, you know, I've had a couple guests that come up, and you know, they just know whatever we make is going to be good.
Yep.
You know, so they trust us now, so they get a little more adventurous. And
yeah, and then that's the thing about being like a neighborhood restaurant. You know, you get a regular following, and then they're willing to go a little further with you because they already know this place is good. So if they're making this, I'm sure it's probably going to be good.
Yeah. Even if it sounds like it's bizarre, like, just trust me, guys. I got you. Just hold on. We'll get there. But yeah, it's been fun. And like just this past year, I've been doing a lot more working with like local farms. There's Sparrow Lake out in Monroeville that I've been working with. There's the Potato Homestead that's literally 10 minutes down the street from my restaurant. Mm-hmm. And they produce beautiful produce.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's probably one of the great things about being in South Jersey is the access to produce.
Yes. Yeah. And like, you know, it's hard. It's hard to be local and fresh and, you know, especially with the seasons changing, but like to find those small local farms that are doing like the permaculture style is so cool. Yeah.
And also having the ability to go to farmers directly and not have to wait for the delivery as some big city providers do, that provides you the opportunity to have some unique weekday specials that others may not, correct?
Yeah, and it's kind of like a little feather in my cap to be like, okay, this, you know, we had a squash. It was like, this squash was on the vine this morning. Mm-hmm. It's like, mm-hmm. It doesn't get fresher than this. Like, you got, like, you want to eat this. And, you know, we sell it to our customers that way. And it's like, it's inspirational to me almost too much because, like, I'm a very entrepreneurial dude. So, like, I see these guys doing this permaculture stuff, and I'm like, I want to do that. I want to have, like, a little farm where I can, like, just grow whatever I want and get all these heirloom stuff. And then I realize I own a restaurant and I work like 60
yeah,
hours a
right,
week. And
I'm
like,
is, right?
I don't know, man.
You're like, that's enough. But what are some of your weekday specials that you have at Kitchen 519?
I mean, we do a lot of seafood heavy stuff. So, you know, we deal with Samuels and Sons in the city, and they're like the biggest seafood provider around here. So they'll always like have great stuff coming in. You know, and that's pretty much how we run our specials. Like, it depends on what purveyor has what, and then we kind of design it out from that. So, like, you know, through the week, it all kind of switches up and changes, but we try to keep it somewhat consistent, you know. So if you had it one day, you can try to get it at the end of the week, but really about 7 days is all we have on it, you know.
Now, also for you guys, you have one of the advantages that a lot of other restaurants don't have, a bakery.
Yeah, yeah, definitely talk about that. I'm really interested to hear about the bakery side.
Yeah, so we purchased the bakery about, I think it was a year and a half ago. And it used to be an old bakery, Adelaide's, and they put it up for sale, and then it fell through on them. Mm-hmm. And so they walked across the street and knocked on our door. It was like, do you guys want to buy our bakery? It was like, well, sure. And I've made bread before, and I've done a couple other things, made a couple cakes. And I was like, all right, okay, cool. It would be a slam dunk. This is going to be easy. Naively, little did I know.
Little did you know that white man can't jump. There's no slam dunks in the history.
Yeah, yeah. So at this point, like I said, a year under our belt, we're starting to really get our feet underneath us, get some traction, and we're really putting out some great stuff over there. We're making breads. We're doing, you know, I just did pretzels this weekend for an Oktoberfest catering, and that's how I learned that, you know, you can't do pretzels the night before, and you got to do them fresh. So at like 7 o'clock start for me, and I'm making pretzels and cooking them in line, doing all the stuff. So again, too, that's like kind of like my downside. I love doing that stuff. If I don't know how to do it, I want to do it, because then it's just like one more arrow in my quiver.
Sure.
Yeah. So just with the bakery, that's definitely our inspiration. You know, a lot of custom cakes, desserts, and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was gonna say, what is like your signature dishes, signature things over at the bakery now?
Well, we always I like our lemon bars. I think they're crazy good. We do brownies, cupcakes, a couple different things. Always have croissants. You know, we kind of just like the restaurant, keep it seasonal. Try to move it around.
Sure.
It's apple pie season. Yeah. I just did a killer apple crumb pie. Did gingerbread also for the Oktoberfest thing. So it's like, you know, I guess that's the good and the bad of it. It's like it switches with what we're doing at the time. So sure. If I am doing the catering, I'm going to do more than what I need just for that and sell it out of the bakery. And hopefully people like it and they really like it, I'll keep doing it. But, you know, you got to come in. You got to see what we got. And if you like it, you got to tell us and we'll keep it going.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, how is that, now that you've had a year plus experience with the bakery now, and how have you been able to balance that with the restaurant? I'm sure you had to make some kind of adjustments with that.
It's definitely a lot of plates spinning, yeah, you know, yep. And especially being right across the street, I get a lot of steps in, you know, I'm all day just running.
You're not worried about Fitbit because you know you're taking a lot of steps.
No, man, I got that. I'm not worried about that at all. But it's good because it allows us to, in a sense, like manage both places at the same time. So, sure. You know, I can get some dough started over here, walk across the street, do a little something, you know, deal with a guest, do whatever I need to, go back next door, finish out my dough, finish out my whatever I'm baking at the time. And, you know, it's a good synergy.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, and like Derek said, not too many people have that option to actually, you know, bring it right across the street and serve it to you.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
Now, it's fall weather, John, which is personally one of my favorite times of year. Actually, any time it's 70 degrees, it's my favorite time of year. It doesn't matter if it's winter or summer. If it's 70 degrees, it's my favorite time of year. Fall Fest with Runnymede, you're going to be there out and about for the community to see your fare and come check you guys out. I always like when restaurants go outside of the box and go to special events like that. What made you want to join with that, and how difficult is it? Because some restaurateurs hate doing special events. Other ones sort of enjoy it.
Yeah, we've always liked events. I mean, it's a big production. But it's a lot of fun, especially like getting out there, you know, hopefully one day we can get a food truck or some type of mobile, you know, set up like that. But right now we just go out there with our pop up and, you know, make it happen. I think with this year, we're going to do a lot of bakery heavy stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, that's great for, you know, fall festivals and, you know, all that stuff. Cooking mobile without a food truck is extremely difficult, and the fire marshal doesn't like it. The health department doesn't like it. When you're out there with like just a pop-up flat top, they're like, what's this rinky-dink operation going on here? But, you know, we have no shame, so we will. Like, it's quite okay with us, but we're going to just probably show up with, like I said, a bunch of pies, pumpkin breads, and stuff like that. Just really showcase the bakery on this one.
Now, also, your restaurant. Now, have you ever been to Kitchen 519, John?
I have not. It is on my ever-increasing list of restaurants to get to.
ever-increasing list. We'll scratch that one off. We'll scratch that one off. But I like the setup of the restaurant. It's very eclectic. You go in, it's sort of a different setup. And that's due to the nature of it formerly being a mechanics garage, correct?
Yeah, it had a couple different evolutions to the place. It was a mechanic garage at one point, then it turned into an Italian deli, then it was like a produce stand type of thing. Like, I don't think they really understood
That's a lot of twists and turns.
Yeah. And originally, you know, when you walk in, the kitchen's up front. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not in the back like most restaurants. And there's a wall to the left that used to be a half wall. And when we were opening, we're like, this would be so cool. People get to come in and look at the kitchen and all stuff. Then it dawned on me. I was like, that's probably not the best idea sometimes. Sometimes it gets a little crazy.
You're right.
They just threw a pan.
Yeah. It gets a little testy and you don't want to see them, you know. It's good to have that little division. So when you come through, you get a little peek into the kitchen. And that's really been a cool part of working there too, is that people leave, they get to say, you know, hey, great food, guys, blah, blah. And like that feedback, I've never gotten that in my career.
But it has a whole different vibe to it also. And do you guys still sell the art that's on the walls?
Yep, it's all consignment. I mean, there's a few pieces that are spoken for that, you know, we just, you know, there's like one guitar that somebody did a mosaic on and she's bringing it in. It didn't even make it through the door. I was like, that's mine. It's like we can hang
sold.
It up. But yeah. It's like, that's mine. We'll put it up, but it's that's coming with me.
And that's what I like about the layout of it, and has a special feel. And when it comes to that holiday time of year and office parties and things like that, you want something that's sort of out of the norm. I know that's what I look for.
Something a little different.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I know you guys are definitely booking holiday parties and things like that. Have your business come in on Monday through Friday and take the place over and have a good time. I mean, do you enjoy that sort of setup?
To an extent. I mean, we try to keep our parties limited. 15, 20 is about
so tops. So you don't party all the time.
just on the weekends, right? But yeah, you know, we try to keep it limited because we're a little smaller on the smaller side. We do 50 to 55 seats, so we'd like people to have the option of coming in. Sometimes in the past, we've had larger parties come in, and they just so loud, man. They take over the whole thing. It's like
you're like, somebody's going to be calling HR tomorrow.
Yeah.
We just had a party last night of, I think, 18, and these women were just dropping F-bombs all over the place. And like my waitress came up, was like, I think I got to say something. And I'm like, no. Just feel them out.
If they're saying F-bombs freely, who knows what they'll say to you.
I thought the kitchen was bad.
Exactly, right?
She went to go hide in the kitchen.
Yeah, but definitely coming into the holiday season, like we do a lot of takeout catering. We've been doing on-site a lot more, you know, and our catering business is pretty great. Like we have menus online, everything online. And the beauty of us too is like we can customize. So people call me up and like I said, I just did Oktoberfest thing. It's like they're like, all right, well, design me a menu, and I put all this effort into it, and they just wanted like brats and, you know, generic stuff, but that's fine. Like I said, I like doing that stuff. It's like I never, you know, recipes I've never worked with before. Let me give it a shot.
What's your best seller?
That's a tough one. I think honestly, the burger has been the best seller. I think we got best burger South Jersey 2 years ago.
Special blend?
Well, it's a certified Hereford beef, just 80-20 blend. But I chose the Hereford because it's got more inner muscular fat to it. So it's like more marbling, almost in the vein of a Wagyu or a Kobe. So it makes a great burger. It's like so juicy and like just stupendous. And then we partnered up with a good brioche, some good bacon. It's like not too many bells and whistles, but just enough to
a good burger doesn't need too
many. It doesn't really need a lot of stuff. It really doesn't.
Yeah.
Just needs real meat. I don't care what all these other people are talking about. Impossible burger. Yeah, it's impossible you're going to put that on my plate. That's what I said. But that's just my personal preference. But you guys do cater a lot to different tastes. So I'm sure that you do have that spin.
Yeah, we have the impossible burger right now.
It'd be impossible to put it on my plate, though. Other people will enjoy it.
But even with that, that's the beauty of it. That's the evolution of our restaurant. It's like we have it now, and we're starting to switch our mindset. You know, we're doing the impossible, but it's also we're starting to realize, like, maybe, you know, as far as vegans and vegetarians, we want to do more whole food type of offerings, because, you know, people get the impossible burger, they think they're getting something. I hope I don't get a cease and desist from him, but it's still junk food. It's not.
Well, and that's our vegan chef, yeah. Christina Martin. She was on here, and she brought up a great point, which I never thought of before. It should be viewed as an ethical and personal choice to eat that. In no fashion or manner is it healthier for you.
No. Right.
Because it's so filled with whatever they're filling it with, it's just as fatty, if not more, than a regular burger.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I view it, too. It's a good stepping stone, you know, for the people that are like, no, I could never eat. Okay, try this. And they eat it, wow, that's not
meat. They might be willing to try something a little bit more.
Then you come back, and you come in for our vegan night, and then you see, like, okay, we got this option, that option, all these different things going on. And, I don't want to say set the hook, but it's like, okay, you start realizing, like, you don't need meat in every meal.
It's the gateway drug.
That's a good one. I like that one. I just had a little bit. I need some more.
Yeah, right. First one's free.
A little, but a little wouldn't do it, John, so a little got more and more. But, and we've even had Chef AJ, who is a very famous vegan chef. She was a comedian on Johnny Carson many times, and she fully admitted that she had a weight problem. And everyone would always say, how is it that you have a weight problem? You're a vegan. She said, I'm a junk food vegan. Mm. And there is such a title.
Yes.
As that, okay, yeah, you may be a vegan, but all you're doing is eating junk food.
Yeah.
So, like you said, that's a good idea to go with the whole idea, because it's not, it has to be this, it has to be that. Let's look at something that is whole and nourishing for the body and is good for you, whatever you want to call it. And whatever your dietary restrictions are, you pick and choose what you need for yourself.
Right. Yeah. And like, it's all like, you know, full circle, like working with all these local farms. That's kind of what's inspiring me. I'm getting, like, you know, this great butternut, and I'm like, oh, what am I going to do with it? And I'm like, well, this is so good. It should just be able to stand alone by itself. So that's like, you know, that's my cross to bear, is figuring out how to get that standalone, you know, to make that the highlight, not the chicken or whatever else is on the plate that, you know, chicken tastes like chicken. But also, you know, you can kind of transform vegetables a little bit more than you can meat, in a sense.
Now, what's your personal favorite thing on the menu?
Well, to be completely hypocritical at this point, I still eat meat. So, you know, pretty much daily, the whole kitchen staff will have chicken sandwiches, you know. And one of my good friends, Sean Daniels, is working with me at the time, and he is the chicken connoisseur. You know, he has recently partaked in raising his own chickens, I should say.
Oh, really?
So that was also a very interesting part of my life, was being there for the harvest of the chickens.
Mm.
So that's something rare that I don't think many chefs have had the opportunity to do, of actually, like, seeing, processing, and then eating chicken.
It seems like anyone who actually watches that happen and watches the process, it has a different appreciation.
And what I also find is restaurateurs and chefs that know the entire A through Z of butchering, I find that dining at their restaurants, one, brings a much more enlightening menu, mm-hmm. because you are much more in tune with the animal, and you are having cuts that aren't normal and zero to little waste.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're able to do that. But, I mean, Kitchen 519, John. I mean, how much fun was this?
This was great. This is absolutely great.
And I know everybody should go down to Kitchen 519, enjoy yourself, whatever menu you wish to dine at. We like to call it whole good food, delicious, tasty, and a good time for all. But why don't you give website, address, anything like that before you get going?
Yeah, you can find us at kitchen-519.com. We're located on Facebook, Kitchen 519, real easy, you know, all across the board. Bakery is Bakery 519. We kept it simple for everybody, you know.
We should have just went complete Bakery 321.
Right? We were racking our brains, like, what do we call it? It's like, just 519. Just keep it.
Don't overthink.
Yeah,
keep it simple.
They can market each other.
But thank you again. All of the food that you brought in was outstanding and delicious. But talking about, John, you just heard me say that any season of mine is my favorite season, provided that it's 70 degrees outside.
Yes.
But we have someone online who sort of has a season-themed debut cookbook, and that is Jordan Zucker with her debut cookbook, One Dish, Four Seasons, Food, Wine, and Sound, all year round. She also hosts the Girl's Guide to Sports, has appeared on Food Network's Grill It with Bobby Flay, and was regularly occurring on the popular TV series Scrubs.
Wow.
Yeah. Don't call me a scrub.
Hi, everybody.
Hello there, Jordan. Wonderful to hear from you. How are you doing tonight?
I'm having trouble hearing you. Hang on.
There we go. How's that? Is that better?
I'm getting a lot of, I'm hearing myself.
You're hearing yourself? All right, well, we're just going to have you talk
then.
Yeah,
that... huh?
We're just going to have you talk then.
Okay.
So tell us about your cookbook. What? How did you come about it, and why did you decide to finally come out with one?
Okay, so One Dish, Four Seasons was originally my mother's idea. My mother is the cook in the family. And she wanted to take a base recipe and just adapt it so you can have whatever you want at any time of day. Because so often we would go to the market with a planned menu and then we would be drawn to another ingredient and we'd abandon our plan and redo it based on what we were seeing. So we're like, okay, let's start with what we want to make, a pasta, a soup, and then adapt it to whatever would predictably be readily available at the market at that time of year. And then I swooped in and added the wine and the music pairing to everything because that's really the completion of any kind of entertaining. And then we just kind of took it from there.
And I sort of like that, how you're pairing music with food. We always hear, John, these beer pairing menus and this and that. And even when you go out and dine sometimes, you're at a restaurant and you could be eating whatever entree, and the most inappropriate music comes on.
The music can just kill the mood.
Oh, yeah. And you're like, what are they playing? They should just serve some earplugs for us. Oh, Jordan, I hope that wasn't you. Is the ambulance coming for you?
Sorry, I had to step out of the restaurant, and now I'm on a road in the middle of Providence. We just started our book tour.
Well, I was hoping that the ambulance wasn't for you. I mean, I don't want you to go...
It's not for me. Sorry, I'm standing on the street.
I have known women to jump in front of buses whenever they didn't want to talk to me anymore.
I'm at Los Andes in Providence, Rhode Island. Somebody is having an emergency around the corner.
Oh.
But I think that they're taking care of it.
Awesome. But what?
Anyway, yes. So the idea is that your meal is a full experience. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, you know, all the elements need to match in the vibe of the evening or the morning or the afternoon.
And also, as we know, it's hot and heavy into football season, and being the host of Girl Guide to Sports, Monday Night Football Watch Party Tips. How about that?
Well, the watch party, I used to do Monday Night Matchup menus where I would create meals and name each dish after the two teams that were playing or the players that were playing, or do a regional inclusion of the menu. Mm-hmm. But I don't have any tips for watching the game. I just encourage everybody to follow along and grab the spirit.
Exactly, exactly.
Sorry, it's super distracting hearing myself back in my ear.
Oh, it's no problem at all. But what I like is the family antidotes in the book, because it really adds a personal touch that you don't see in...
Thanks. I try to, talk to you as if, you know, while you're making the dish, so it's not just a sterile recipe with bland direction. I try to, jump in there and add some family lore and personality.
Exactly, because most of the times it's like, okay, half a scoop of this, 3 teaspoons of that, and it's just like a regular machine where we are drawn into the one dish, 4 seasons, and we really feel like we're part of your family, and we're going to have, as you said, dishes to bring to Friendsgiving or Friends Mas, which I sort of like that saying, Friends Mas.
Friends Mas. I haven't done that one yet. I'm going to have to try that one.
Oh, man. See, I thought that was one of yours.
Thanks for the idea.
I'll just take 10% of wherever it's put out. But what would you say is your favorite fall meal that we could
have? My favorite what?
Fall meal.
My favorite fall meal. I definitely like to throw pomegranate into everything. I have a pomegranate tree in my backyard in L.A., and we had such a cold season in the beginning of the year that all of my trees are about a month or two behind in harvesting. So hopefully when I'm back from tour, they'll all be ready for me to pick. And it's soothing to me to open up the sections and take out all of the seeds. I love pomegranate.
Oh, and it's such an interesting and different fruit to even look at. I'm jealous that she gets to grow pomegranates.
Yeah, right in the backyard.
Just keep on bragging. We don't. We just have to be proud of Philly cheesesteaks and soft pretzels here. We don't get to have beautiful pomegranates out in Philadelphia. We're lucky to even have Jersey tomatoes, I guess.
Philly holds a special place in my heart. I went to college in Philly. I love all things Philly.
And also, you're going to be having a book signing coming up very soon in Philadelphia, and that is on Monday, October 14th at the University of Pennsylvania's bookstore. So you will be coming down shortly.
We actually have 2 book signings. We're coming on Friday. Since the book was cross-genre, I capitalized on that and partnered with wine and food and books and music. Mm. So I'm on tour with Pink Talking Fish, which is a cover band of Pink Floyd, Talking Heads, and Fish. And I'll be signing books at a bunch of their concerts along the way. And the first one's Friday in Ardmore, which is on the Main Line, suburb of Philly.
Yes, indeed. That is awesome. And I like that concept. I don't think I've ever heard of book signings at a music concert before, John.
Me
have
either.
You?
You're not going to do any crowd surfing.
Well, thanks. I'm glad I'm the pioneer.
Yeah, John does bring up a good idea. You could tell them if you'll sign the book while you're crowd surfing.
I'll sign the book by what?
While you're crowd surfing.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if that's the kind of dancing they do there, but sure. I'll do
So having a special place in your heart for Philadelphia, I have 2 questions for you.
Yes, although I did lose again to my friend that was playing the Eagles defense today.
Oh.
The Eagles defense had a huge day today.
Yeah, the Eagles defense did do pretty well today, especially with the rookie.
2 touchdowns, I think.
Yes, indeed. We put a stomping on them New York Jets, even though they should be called New Jersey Jets since they don't ever step foot in New York. That's
true.
A whole
that's a whole different story.
New York tri-state area across the water, right?
But I have 2 questions for you. What was your favorite season in Philadelphia? And 2, where was your favorite place to eat in Philadelphia?
Oh, okay. So my favorite season in Philly while I was in college was probably fall, just because Well, you know, living in LA, I miss the foliage. I miss the crisp days and the jacket that's not too heavy, you know. And it's beautiful. And then my favorite restaurant while I was at school, I definitely got sushi from Genji every day, but that might date me. I don't know if it's still there. I heard that it burned down or something.
I do not believe it is still there, but the memories shall last with you forever. But I will tell you
fond memories of Genji.
That will last longer than Genji is if anyone goes out and purchases your book, One Dish, Four Seasons, Food, Wine, and Sound All Year Round. It will last a lifetime or generations even possibly if you take good care of it. It was such
It's a hearty book. It's a coffee table book.
Exactly.
It's got legs behind it.
Jordan Zucker, it was such a pleasure talking to you, and we wish you the best of luck and look forward to seeing you in Philadelphia very soon.
Thanks, you guys. We'll see you this weekend.
Have a great night. Bye-bye. Well, talking about all great things. We had John here at Kitchen 519 talking about his bakery, but we've got a gentleman on the phone who, shall I say, people are going as far as calling him the godfather of bread. He is the founder of Bread Alone Bakery and the author of the new cookbook with Lauren Chapman, Living Bread, Tradition and Innovation in Artisan Bread Making, and it's available October 15th. Daniel, it is such a pleasure to have you join us. How are you doing tonight?
It's my pleasure, but it's available October 1st.
October 1st. How dare me? You know what? I'm firing whoever researches everything for us, and he needs to be suspended for a month. So as far as it being available, gosh darn it, it's available now.
Yep.
Someone added a 5 in there by accident. I'm going to blame you, John.
Okay, fine. I'm blamed for a lot of things. That's okay. I can take it.
So, Living Bread, tell us, first of all, how did you come to be considered a master bread baker?
Well, you know, I say that I am a graduate of the backdoor school of baking, meaning that I've never gone to baking school, and I have visited many bakeries through the back door in the middle of the night, dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of bakeries, and I've learned to bake bread from standing by the masters and the great bakers of our time across Europe. And I've been called the Indiana Jones of bread, but I've never been called the godfather of bread, so I'm quite pleased with this new title.
Indiana Jones sounds like it's much too work that you're always chasing someone down or having to battle someone.
I'm chasing down the great breads. I'm chasing down the great bakers. I'm chasing down the great ingredients. I've been really lucky that I've been able to travel, and I've been really lucky that so many people have graciously invited me into their bakeries. And the book is really a tribute to my travels and to the people that I've met. Although it's a recipe book, there are profiles of farmers and millers, bakers across Europe, some of which who have been baking for generations, and some of which are new to the craft.
And you even break the book down into sections with straight doughs, simple sourdoughs, complex sourdoughs, sprouted breads, using leftover starter. I mean, it goes on and on. And I know John here from Kitchen 519, he was mentioning to us that you were excited to see a book like this, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I've been trying to get our sourdough game going. I've been maintaining a starter for, I think, about 6 months now. And I just know how much time commitment goes into it. I was looking at your breakdown at the beginning of the book, and it's like 24-hour bread cycle. It's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really a well-prepared book. It's professional. We have an executive chef in here who's blown away by it. So congratulations on such a great book that you've put together.
Well, I really appreciate that. And I need to give a shout out to my photographer, Jörg Lehmann, because Jörg has photographed many of the great chefs of Europe. their cookbooks. But he's not known in this country, and he traveled all over Europe with me. And you can see from the photographs that they're just stunning.
Oh, they're amazing.
So
absolutely.
Much emotion, yep. And so much reality in them.
Now, let's see. I've always wanted to ask a professional this, John, and I'm so glad we have Daniel online. As you know, Daniel, Philadelphia is famous for its cheesesteaks and soft pretzels, which are two
yep.
heavily based bread products. Well, me as well, I'll agree, is when you leave the tri-state area, I have yet to find a cheesesteak or soft pretzel that matches my expectations of the flavor profile that I am looking for. And everyone says, oh, they just don't know how to make it, this or that. But everyone in Philadelphia, the bakers that you talk to in Philadelphia, and there's some rough and tumble bakers in Philadelphia. Would you agree, John?
Yes, absolutely.
And their answer isn't technique. It's very simple. They go, it's because of the water. If they don't have a water, they'll never have the same kind of bread. Is that true? Is it that the definition of the water table can make such a difference in the bread that we would never have the same type of bread around here that we could anywhere else in the world?
Well, I will say this. I know you have some rough and tumble bakers there, and I'm glad that I live 3 or 4 hours from Philadelphia because I am going to disagree categorically.
Okay.
I think it has to do with the recipes. I think it has to do with the techniques, and it has to do with the baking tradition. But I do not think it has to do with the water.
So why would you – so it's just that the techniques haven't been perfected elsewhere? Because that – it always boggles my mind.
I think that the style of baking, the breads that you folks love there, you know, it's kind of like why are bagels in Montreal different from bagels in New York? Because there's a completely different history, a completely different way of approaching a bagel. So I think it's that. And, you know, I think it's good that Philadelphia has breads that aren't made anywhere else. And I hope that there's lots of breads that aren't made in other places, because that's what makes things interesting.
And the thing with bread, maybe it's just me, nothing. I love fresh bread coming out of the oven, just nice and hot. And even like places you go all around the world, it's just you're served a nice piece of bread somewhere, and it brings, it's truly the saying, breaking bread. If you're breaking good bread anywhere around the world, you're going to build good relationships.
I can't agree with you more. And, you know, the one thing that has been so interesting for me in writing this book and traveling and talking to people about bread is it crosses, doesn't matter if you're rich or poor or black or white or whatever your ethnic background is, people love sharing bread, breaking bread, having an experience of eating the simple food together, and it just brings people together. I actually have a chapter in the back of the book about my experiences of baking bread in South Africa where I talk about this theme.
Yeah, I mean, and the thing is so many things have changed throughout history. Technology, electricity, good Lord. We can go on and on at different things, but it seems as though the best quality recipes and bread making has been going on for hundreds, if not thousands of years. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, people thought sourdough bread, and sourdough bread has been made for thousands of years. Commercial yeast was only invented in the late 1890s. So from the beginning of time until 130 years ago, people were making traditional sourdough breads.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. If it's not broke, you don't have to fix it, John.
Absolutely right. Yeah. Absolutely right. Now, what would you say about, I know more and more we're hearing people talk about that commercially made bread nowadays is different than maybe 40, 50 years ago, and maybe it's not the best health-wise. What is your feelings on that?
I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
I, you know, there's a lot of misinformation right now about wheat and gluten sensitivity. And I like to say, and I have support from the nutrition community, that artisanal bread made from simple flour, water, salt, sourdough, is a different kind of food than commercially produced foods that have a lot of preservatives and additives and pumped up with a lot of yeast and wheat gluten. I think it's time that we kind of separate, you know, the industrial bread products from the artisanal bread products, instead of lumping them in the same category.
Without a doubt. But I know one thing that will certainly last the test of time there. It's Living Bread, Tradition and Innovation in Artisan Bread Making. Daniel, it was such a pleasure talking to you. I really looked forward to our conversation. And feel free to give any social medias or websites before you go.
I really appreciate it. And if people want to get a hold of me, they can get hold of me through Instagram at Dan Makes Bread. And I love answering questions, and I love being in contact with people who enjoy my book.
Perfect. And as we said, the book is available now. So go buy it wherever books are sold. Have a great night.
Thank you so much for having me.
You too. Bye-bye. So going from talking about things that we've seen in Philadelphia, and John, you are an expert in things in and around New Jersey because you do have a book that's called what?
A Culinary History of Cape May.
Oh, A Culinary History of Cape May. Well, we've got a gentleman online who has stories from New Jersey's diners, monuments to the community. So up and down the coast of New Jersey, we have Michael Gabriel. How's it going tonight, Michael?
Hi, thank you for having me on the air. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's our pleasure to have you. So, iconic Jersey diners. Everybody always thinks of things that are iconic to New Jersey. Diners are usually the top of the list, if not number one. So where did your love of diners come from and the thought process to get some stories from these diners?
I've always been a fan of diners. I mean, growing up, I used to go to diners with my friends, but all those years, that's about as far as it went. I just, you know, diners are something you did when you were living in New Jersey. A number of years ago, I started writing books for a publisher called The History Press, and it turned out to be a very nice relationship. Their focus is on local history, local news. And we discussed some ideas for what we could do in terms of writing about the local history of New Jersey. Well, we published a book back in 2013, The History of Diners in New Jersey. That went over pretty well. And then about 2 years ago, they said, "Well, how about another diner book?" And I said, "Yeah, I think it's about time. I think there's a lot more to say." So. My approach is basically as a reporter. I've been a journalist all my life, so that's where I'm coming from when it comes to writing about diner history.
Now, here's the question I wanted to ask you, because I know I get a lot of different people who have different opinions on this. How do you define what a diner is?
There's all different ways to define a diner. If you're a purist, and maybe I'm a little bit of a purist, you would define a diner very generically. It is a eatery. And this is, of course, back in the days of factory-built diners in the 20th century. So it's an eatery, a standalone eatery, modular, prefabricated, with all the utilities built into it. And even back in the 30s and 40s, they also used to include, you would get the silverware and the cups and the glasses and the plates along with it. So that's the most generic way to define a diner. In my book, what I try to make the point is that the diners are really the hub of a community. Mm-hmm. People in various towns and regions, they take a lot of pride in their diner.
Sure.
And it's the place where everybody meets and greets. It's the place where you make a lot of memories. You share a lot of things with your friends. So that's another way to define a diner too. How well does it integrate into the community?
No. Yeah, I know. And I've also heard people talk about, you know, it has to be open a certain amount of time and, you know, has to be open 24 hours, things like that. But it looks like you're more in terms of specifically the structure of the place and also how it relates to the community, sounds like.
Right. Well, there's certainly the era of the factory built diner is basically over.
Sure.
Now diners are built on site and also retrofitted into storefront properties. And I think that's fine. They're still diners. As a purist, you would say a diner from the 20th century is, you know, and most of them were built in New Jersey. That's one reason why we're the diner capital of the world. We have more diners than anywhere else. But in the 20th century, many of the diner builders operating in factories built these stainless steel gems that everybody admires around the world. So that's it. That's one way to define a diner. You can add your own definition. Some diners stay open 24 hours, some don't. You can almost always get breakfast any time of the day. That's another nice feature about a diner. I always like to say when you walk in, a diner should have a nice counter area. That's
sure.
That's where you meet all the interesting people. So everybody's got their own definition.
Now, I know you said how you go with the traditional sense of the diner definition, but there's many different things that call themselves diners throughout New Jersey.
I've
read that within the next possible 10 years, it was an article predicting the demise of the Jersey diner. Then many restaurateurs and diner owners were chiming in of the reason why. Many of them were stating the rise of fast casual restaurants and especially the prevalence of Grubhubs and all of this, that people don't need that 24-hour spot of community anymore, that now if you want something, you can get it delivered, or these fast casuals are staying up very late or opening very early, and the profit margins are extremely thin while having to have a very large menu, because that's another thing that is very famous of the Jersey
sure.
diner.
Yep.
You go in, it's the menu's the size of a Bible. It's like, okay, what do I want today? Do you agree that within the next 10 years that it could be maybe one diner in every county? Do you see them dwindling, or what could they do to change this around and keep this a tradition?
I don't see them dwindling. I mean, of course, you lose some old vintage diners. For example, there was a great diner in Belvedere, New Jersey, a bit north from where you are. It was called the Crossroads Diner. That got picked up, put on a truck, and is literally going to be driven up to New York State to find a new life. You know, the thing about the diner business, it's always evolving, it's always changing, it's always very fluid. Some people, they've been talking about the demise of diners for a long time. That might be true in places like New York City and Long Island, but I think in New Jersey, the diner scene is pretty stable, but things always change. The tastes of the next generation might not be so sentimental when it comes to diners. But I think there'll always be a place for a diner in a community, in a region. And again, it's not so much the food; it's the interaction. It's the kind of the mythology and the culture of a diner. That's what really draws people to a diner. That's really where they make their memories.
Now,
I don't think you get that at Grubhub. So
now, for me, my personal favorite meal of a diner is breakfast. I think
absolutely.
See, we've got people thinking. How about you, John?
Yeah, breakfast definitely.
All right, Kitchen 519. What about you?
Yeah, no doubt.
So we're all in agreement that if there seems to be a demise in diners for any reason, they really need to get a good marketing push for the breakfast.
Right. Eggs over easy, corned beef hash or bacon, some potatoes on the side. Wheat toast and a cup of coffee. There's my standard default breakfast any time of the day or night.
Well, I have to tell you, it's a wonderful book, Michael Gabriel, The Stories from New Jersey Diners, Monuments to Community. I want everyone to go out, purchase it, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. And hey, why not? Go to the diner and read it while you're having a meal. Really immersive.
Absolutely.
That's the whole diner experience.
Absolutely. Might as well. Just get the whole experience.
Exactly. Have yourself a great night. Do you want to share any websites or anything like that before you go?
No, just I hope if people do buy the book, I hope they enjoy it. I hope they're entertained by it, and I hope they learn a bit about the history of the diner business. It's a fascinating topic, and it's been a labor of love. I really enjoyed working on it, and I go around and I do a lot of presentations at libraries and historical societies, and people always come with a diner story. That's very heartwarming.
Awesome, awesome. Have yourself a great night.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye. So, bye-bye. That was fun. Yeah. I do stick with the scrapple when I do go. I do love a good, nice, crispy scrapple. How about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I've become more and more of a scrapple.
I love to hear it, John.
I really have. I mean, I still, you know, pork roll. It's still a favorite. But when I see scrapple on the menu, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go for that.
Good. How about you, John?
I don't think you can get scrapple anywhere else but a diner. You know, really. Where else, you know, is really doing that?
I would say restaurants like Sabrina's and all of them, they do like brunch. Sort of like, especially in Philly, if you can go places, the brunch menus. But on a regular basis, yeah, pretty much the diner and also the carts in and around Philadelphia. You can always, I know for sure, a cart at 8th and Market has a good scrapple. But let's see if someone else online with us can maybe chime in where they can get scrapple on a regular basis besides a diner. And that would be Chef Barbie Marshall, the finalist and all-star of Hell's Kitchen. Chef Barbie, how's it going tonight?
Hey, I always get my scrapple from a diner.
A diner.
There you go.
But the question is, where else could you get it on a regular basis?
Royal Farms.
Oh, really? Very good. Ding, ding.
They're the
Sheets.
Only ones with Sheets a breakfast scrapple sandwich.
Wow. Sheets isn't really a lot around here, but Sheets does as well, Chef Barbie. Did you know that?
Who?
Sheets. Sheetz. Sheetz.
Sheetz has scrapple?
Yes, they do.
I did not know that.
That's why I always tell Wawa, and this is unless you're going to sponsor the show, Wawa, I'm going to call you out. You want to be a Philadelphia institution, put scrapple on your menu. I don't want to hear about it.
Okay, so here's the thing. The reason that Wawa can't have scrapple on their menu
they don't have a griddle. They don't have a griddle or a fryer. I know this, Chef Barbie. Still.
It's the fryer. I'm like this whole griddle thing, scrapple doesn't go on the griddle. It gets deep fried.
Still,
you're
Chef
not
Barbie.
Eating scrapple because you're
Chef Barbie, they have to have it on the sidewalk then. Put it out on the sidewalk, get some scrapple going. Otherwise, you've got competition. Game on, Royal Farms and Sheets. But let's talk about why you called in, besides my petty arguments. So what's hot and happening this week?
So I called in because I went to a nightmare this week, and I had an absolute blast when I was doing it. So we've all heard of Tinsel at this point, right? Mm-hmm. The pop-up Christmas bar. Mm-hmm. Well, now they've done a pop-up Halloween bar, and it was absolutely amazing. Nice cocktails, just really, really, really fun. You can follow them at Tinsel Philly, TINSEL PHILLY. All of the things that they did for Christmas, they have done up in style for Halloween, from drinks to all the decor.
And I really enjoy it because the decor, I mean, I've seen some of the pictures, and that is the place to hang out for some. Not me personally, because I don't have an account, but Instagram-worthy pictures. Because I know the youngins like to
absolutely
have
absolutely Instagram-worthy pics.
Them grammars.
That's where you're going to want to get your pics for Instagram, 116 South 12th Street.
Grammars had a whole different
That's
meaning
like
in the early 80s, didn't it?
And there's one more thing.
She didn't want to comment on that.
All right. So I am on Wednesday going to do the Great Philly Cook-Off at Drexel.
Ooh.
And I'm working with a high school student and competing with a bunch of chefs all around the city for PRLA.org. So if you guys want to come out, PRLA.org/Great Philly Chef Cook-Off.
Now, awesome. Are all the chefs cooking with a high school student, or are there only you the one being burdened with that?
Oh, I think she cut us off. She didn't like the question, John. Are you there?
I didn't hear the question. Oh. I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay. Are all the chefs cooking with a high school student, or are only you being burdened with that task?
I have the worst connection ever. I heard high school students.
We're going to say, Chef Barbie, you've got to go to the event to find out, John. So PRLA, get your tickets. Go see Chef Barbie this Wednesday. Have a great night, Chef Barbie. We'll talk to you again.
All right. Talk to you soon.
See you.
All
right. That was the easy answer, but that was fun, John. Thank you so much for joining us.
It was great to be
my special co-host, and we'll see Don again on next show. But you're always welcome, John. You're always welcome.
I appreciate that.
But we had also John. We'll go around real quick, 10 seconds. Give your name, anything you want.
John Stewart with Kitchen 519. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram. We got all our weekly specials, everything going up. Find us on social media.
John Howard Fusco, writer, Eating in South Jersey. Find me at Eating S Jersey on Instagram and on Twitter.
I'm Derek Tim, BlueJeanFood.com. It was such a joy. We had Jordan Zucker with the book One Dish, Four Seasons. Also had Daniel Leader. That was a real joy. I don't know about you, John. That was real
that
fun.
That was great to hear.
Bread Alone, Bakery New Cookbook, Living Bread, Tradition and Innovation in Artisan Bread Making. And also Michael Gabriel, Stories from New Jersey Diners. And, of course, Chef Barbie Marshall. And this is Small Bites, live on Sundays on wildfireradio.com. Follow us on all of our syndications, wherever they are. Google it. Catch us the following day on all your Apple products, on iTunes. And we end the show like we always do with a joke of the week from the legendary joke teller, Jackie the Joke Man Martlin.
Hi. This is Jackie Martling for Small Bites. A guy's very old, so his son puts him in assisted living. The first night, during dinner, the old guy starts to lean to the left, and an attendant runs over and straightens him up. Well, a little while later, the old guy starts to lean to the right, and the attendant runs over and straightens him up again. That night, the son calls his father and says, "So how is it, Pop?" The old guy says, "Well, it's not too bad, sonny boy. Today I played badminton, and I went in the pool. And you know, the food's good. No, it's not too bad here at all. But you know, sonny boy, they won't let you fart." Oh, that's a beauty. Small bites, small bites.